Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
I'm excited to have a conversation today with my longtime buddy, Rick Tyler, who is no stranger to the land of crazy. And I'm not just talking about politics, being out in the world of communication sometimes can be a crazy dance in and of itself, regardless of the party. But Rick is co-founder of Foundry Strategies, a political, strategic, and communication consulting firm, and was a senior member of Senator Ted Cruz's 2016 campaign. He's was for a good portion of his early political career a key member of former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich's team, as both a spokesman and an advisor. He is also a buddy of mine at MSNBC, where he serves as a political analyst. And his book, Still Right, An Immigrant-Loving, Hybrid-Driving, Composting American, makes the case for conservatism. It's out now, folks. I highly recommend you pick it up. Having grown up at times on the margins,
same here.
And my, you know, my mom and dad. My mom was a laundress, mm-hmm. Making minimum wage. Mm-hmm. My dad was a truck driver for the Department of Defense. And you know, again, there were some moments. I remember the conversation in our household about, we may need to get some government cheese to come mm-hmm. in the door to make some ends meet. But the reality of it is, what I've learned to your very important point, Rick, is no one, the poor in this country, and I think you put it so well, the poor in this country does not wake up every morning going, gee, I think all I want to be today is poor. They don't. No one wants to be poor. Circumstances, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, situations, conditions, all these factors sort of get baked into that. And it goes to a lot of what you're hearing a lot in the Black community especially, but other communities as well, talk about the systemic nature of poverty and how issues like race and class and other indices play a role in perpetuating that poverty. So this idea that you're somehow now the consequence or the response is, well, we want to make the rich just like the poor. Okay, then what? You know, you're right. Let's figure out how we allow the system to lift up and push people out into the economy in a way in which they have a fair shot to realize the dream that they have for themselves. We know the story of those who come here with nothing and make things happen. All right. But we also know the story of those who are already here who can't get things started. And so we have to look holistically, in my view, at the system and see where we can make those changes. And I agree with you. I'm a little bit of all of those factions at any given time, because it is case by case. It is situational. There's some things that, you know, for me, conservatism is less about a policy position. Because I know a lot of Democrats who are pro-life, but are very progressive in everything else that they articulate. Right. But they're pro-life. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of Republicans who are pro-choice and very conservative to use that term again, about what they believe on guns or Second Amendment, or whatever. But for me, conservatism is about preserving the value of something. It is about how you preserve the value of the individual, the value of that individual's liberties and freedoms under our Constitution. That's for me what conservatism is about. It is a philosophy more than it is a policy. It is a way of looking at the country through the lens of every individual who comprise it, who has a dream, and how do we help them preserve that dream for themselves, that they can pass it on and make it better for the next generation. And I think that the fact that a lot of folks feel they can't do that now is why you see and feel this sort of tension in the body politic, where, and you see it in polling, you've seen it, you've talked about it in the past, where people say, you know, life is not going to be better for my kids than it was for me. And that scares a lot of parents. So from a conservative perspective, I'm like, okay, let's figure out how we can preserve that ideal for that family, that they can make it better for the next generation, who in turn can make it better for the next generation. And I think Trump came in and just basically crapped all over that with this, you know, with these straw dog arguments about a wall and about, you know, as we saw in the 2018 cycle and again in 2020, all these immigrants pouring across the border to take your job and telling white women in the suburbs they're coming for you. They're moving to your neighborhood. Who's moving to your neighborhood? Baby, I'm already living in your neighborhood. What are you afraid of me for? Right? I'm three doors down from you. What are you talking about?
You know,
I'm already
me of,
here.
There's one of these network shows. It's called, I think it's called Preppers, right? You know what a prepper is, right? And I love watching that show and how they prepare, right? And I would say I'm a prepper in the sense that I want to be prepared. Like I have a backup generator and I have water when the power, because we live out here in the country. And so we want to maintain the comforts, right? And then, but the common theme in all the preppers was when it goes down, the shit goes down and they're coming after you. And they bug out to their bug out. They hide. And I'm always thinking like, who is chasing you? Like, and now like everything the preppers said, right? Pandemic. Economic collapse, you know, all these things, they all happened.
They all happened.
And here I am in the country, right? And the marauders, they never showed up. Like, where are the marauders? Like, they're supposed to be here by now. And government agents are supposed to be chasing me, although I'm not running anywhere. But anyway.
Dude, let me tell you, the last place they're going to come to is your house. The first place they're going to go to is a Target.
Like, I didn't get, like, the whole prepper thing, right? But look, you hit on a lot of very good points, and the division comes down to basically is the function of government and what government can best do. We take individual freedom, I think, in a very misconstrued way, because we talk about individual freedom, and the founders were very concerned about individual freedom.
Yes,
but it doesn't mean individual freedom doesn't mean you don't care for your fellow citizen. And it's apparent in the whole mask thing, right? It's my constitutional right not to wear a mask. Okay. But you know, you can infect people and they can get sick. Is that your constitutional right? I don't think it's your constitutional right.
You have a constitution. Okay. So if it's your constitutional right to not wear a mask, is it your constitutional right not to put on your seatbelt? But when you get in your car, what's the first thing you do?
Put on your seatbelt.
Right.
And some would argue.
And that was mandated by law.
That was mandated by law.
You've just been asked to wear a mask.
The reason
mandate by law that you have to wear a mask. Everybody has to wear a mask, right?
Yeah. The reason the states all adopted is because they were going to take away their federal highway funds. And so they said, well, we better get on the ball.
You know, yeah, we'll get on the ball, right?
We get on the ball. And guess what? It saved a lot of lives. And so there's always going to be this balance between what we do corporately, right, and what we do individually. We can't be, everybody just can't be an individual and claim individual rights. We have to be aware of our fellow citizens, and we have to take care of our federals. I put it this way, you know, the conservatives always rail about, you know, welfare and too much government spending and helping the poor and all this. Okay, that's great. Do you know if just every other person or half the country, and it's not even that, Michael, it's like if 1 in 20, which is what right. it is, 1 in 10, and right. what it, which is what it is now, right? If, but if let's say half the people actually decided, I'm going to help one other person, not 20 people, not two, not 1,000, just one other person, we wouldn't need welfare.
Right. We wouldn't.
We wouldn't need it because
and, oh, by the way, that just for some folks
but,
out there.
But half the country doesn't actually need help, right? It's really a small number. But here's the thing, I'll tell you a quick short story. I had a friend of my wife and I. She became homeless and she lived with us for a while.
Right.
And she lost her home, and she was actually very bright, very smart. She had been a registered nurse for years. But she had mental health issues. Like right. she was not capable of holding a job. She was never going to hold a job. Like it was like you could assess her and say, this person is never going to, she was always going to need help. It wasn't just like we can help her now and then she'll be better. No, she was never going to get better, Michael. Right. She was always going to need help. And here's the thing. I had another friend of mine who I just happened to run across, and I said, he had diabetes, but he was perfectly capable of working, a very smart guy. Mm-hmm. But he just gave up, and he just said, well, I filed for disability, and I'm living on disability. And I'm like, there's something, like, you can do something. And you know why he got disability like that? Because he's smart and competent. He doesn't have a mental health issue. He could fill out all that crappy paperwork that I had mm-hmm. to hire a lawyer to do,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. right? Because I couldn't even do it. And so why can't my friend who is homeless get help from the government? Because she can't manage the barriers to actually get help.
Right.
And my other friend is perfectly capable of working. He can get help. Why? Because he can fill out all the forms because he's really smart.
Right.
There's something wrong with that system.
Yeah.
People are always going to, we have to recognize as conservatives that people are always going to need help. But I don't want these other people clogging up the system so my friend can't get help.
Right.
You follow me?
I got you. No. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. And that speaks to, I think, a lot of how the system weighs down on individuals to the point that we see a retaliatory response that's manifest through the political avatar of Donald Trump. And that's how and why a white female mother of two living in New England, divorced, when she looks at Donald Trump, says he's just like me, because what she sees herself as is fighting for her kids, fighting for her family, trying to make those ends meet. Donald Trump gives rhetorical legitimacy to that fight, and they latch on to that because it's the first time they've actually heard someone who speaks to that. Bill Clinton says, I feel your pain. But what Trump did was he said, I'm going to speak to your pain because I feel it, but I don't say anything about it, right? You know, but when I speak to that, what you did in the example you gave was you acted on someone else's pain. You stepped in. You did what a lot of these, you know, card-carrying Christians out here who are embracing something I don't even recognize as Christianity anymore. What you did was you lived out the gospel by taking someone in and helping them. You didn't just said, I feel your pain. You just didn't go to someone else and say, hey, gee, I have a friend who's in a certain way. And, you know, talked about that pain. What you did was you acted on it. And for me, that's the ultimate conservative. And well, even take that label off. That is the ultimate human thing to do, is to act. And that's something that we've stopped doing.
Well, since you've raised it to a theological discussion, let me use this example.
I can't help myself.
During hurricane, during Superstorm Sandy, right? You remember that? Mm-hmm. And
very well.
The city of New York had decided that they were going to purchase turkeys for people, you know, in these devastated communities for the holidays. I don't know whether we could cook the turkeys, but anyways, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And of course, the news did a heartwarming story and everybody getting their turkeys. And look, I'm fine with them getting the turkeys. I'm not upset that they got their turkeys. It's fine. It's good use of taxpayer. Go ahead, give them the turkeys. But it's not a heartwarming story. And the reason is because the taxpayers, through compulsion of taxation, paid for the turkeys. But nowhere did someone say, I'm going to sacrifice on my own and go and help this one person. Because people don't just need financial assistance. They need holistic healing. They need they need people to minister to them. And the government can't, the government cannot minister to you no matter what it does. It could give you a home. It could write you a check. It could do all kinds, but it cannot minister to you as a human being. We're supposed to minister to each other as human beings. And that's right. Why I say if a small percentage of the world would just say, I just need to help some, not help the world, not write a check to the United Way, not that that's a bad thing to do. And they do a lot of great work. Don't misunderstand. I'm just saying, in your own way, what can you do to help one other individual? Just one other individual and say, I'm going to take this on because I care about that person and I can make a difference in their life. And it's so rewarding and satisfying.
Thanks for listening to this quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Now, we'll be back with a full show soon. But in the meantime, you can go to Apple Podcasts, review us, give us 5 stars. Yes, we like the 5-star rating. Or you can listen on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. Catch you later, folks.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.